Welcome back to episode 71 of Chad and Steve Have a Podcast. If this is your first time joining us, this podcast is about YouTube in one form or another, and it's from the perspective of two longtime creators who each have over a decade of experience on the platform. Steve Ramsey is the creator, host, editor, executive producer, and assistant to the executive producer of Woodworking for Mere Mortals, a channel where Steve shares his passion for woodworking with audiences of all skill levels and backgrounds. Chad Reynolds is the executive producer and co-creator of Clean My Space, a channel which helps people clean better and faster from the perspective of someone who absolutely hates cleaning. That would be my wife. Sometimes we have guests on, and sometimes it just ends up being two old men waving their fists at the sky. So
not that old.
And maybe not that much fist waving, but let's get into just a little fist waving. Steve, how are you doing and what have you been up to?
I'm doing great. Just working on podcast stuff. A couple questions for you. I wanted to ask you, did you ever bought anything because of an Instagram ad? You saw an ad on it and you ended up with a sale. You clicked through and you made a purchase.
So I've come very close. I've never fully committed to, I saw this on an Instagram feed, I bought it, and now I have it in my house. I've never had something delivered. You?
So I did, yeah. I think I might have purchased something before based on an Instagram ad, but it might have been a kind of thing where the Instagram ad intrigued me, and then I went back later directly to the site right, or something and bought it. But yeah, I made my actual purchase, this company who sells jeans, because I needed some new jeans. And it was like, yeah, perfect fit, you know, and everything. And the guy's butts looked really good in the ads, you know. I'm like, you know, that's just sells me on my own insecurities.
Steve, I'm going to be honest and say I wasn't expecting it to be jeans. I thought you were going to be like, oh, I got a cool flashlight, or they had a cool drill bit. Something.
That's what you would think. No, yeah. It's pants.
No. It's jeans.
It's pants. Yeah. So I did that. But I don't know. It was kind of, I felt weird. I felt like, because I'm the one who usually runs these kind of ads on Instagram and Facebook, you know, for my courses. And they always do really well. But I always think, well, I never click on those things. Well, here I am clicking on it. And I made a purchase. And I had to return the purchase because it didn't fit. And I've actually made two returns with them just to get the fit exactly the way I want it and everything. And it's like so cool. It's such an easy experience. So anyways, that was my first foray into Instagram. Purchase.
Where's your head at for shopping right now? I know we've come off of 2 years where online shopping was just kind of the whatever. Were you the type to like, would you have originally made a purchase of jeans at a store where you would have tried them on?
I've been pretty happy with online purchases for a long time, really. So it's not anything too new. I do sort of miss trying on clothes in person, but honestly, I end up getting frustrated a lot of times because I just can't find the size I want, or if I find the look I want, they don't have it in the size I need. I don't know. It's just, as long as you have time, purchasing online actually can take longer because of all the back and forth you might have to do getting the fit right. You know, Amazon does a really cool thing with that Amazon wardrobe. I've done that before where you buy like six different things that one of those may be the right one, but you just try them all on and then just send the rest back.
So they still have that, but then they send you a big box and you just try on a bunch of stuff. You keep the stuff that you want and you ship the rest of the stuff back.
It's amazing.
And it's like brand name stuff, or is it kind of like?
Well, I don't remember. It's been a while since I've done that, but I think it's for almost all their clothes. Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, I find it's been somewhat challenging to kind of get back to doing some of all of the other things we used to do pre-COVID. And I was just wondering if you're just so set in the shopping online, in your shopping online ways that like even something like jeans, which can be, especially if you have to return them twice, that's frustrating.
Yeah, I'm finding it's easier to just, a lot of times and not just clothes, but if I want to go out and buy something that they don't have what I'm looking for. And then I get to the store and I'm like, well, why am I even bothering? I could just order this online and get what I want. And so it's
that small, uncomfortable changing room. And then you have to walk out of the changing room with ill-fitting clothes and other people see you. It's true. I get it. I hope your jeans work out for you. What else is going on? What are you working on?
So, you know, the other thing I was thinking about doing, and I guess I need your input on this, is I was thinking about setting up like a Squarespace website for my other podcast, because it doesn't have a website. I have the domain, but, and so I got a Squarespace, you know, you get like a 14-day free, and I thought, well, this will be easy, Squarespace, you know. And I started fumbling through it, and I'm like, do I want to really spend time on this? And then I started thinking, why do I need a website? And so I started looking at other podcasts, and some of the biggest podcasts, they don't have websites. They just, you Google them, and it's just, you know, Apple Podcast or Spotify or whatever. And so then I stopped doing everything. I'm like, yeah, well, I don't know. Why do I need a website? We have a website.
We do.
Well, I think for us, the main reason was so it would be one easy spot when we're trying to get people on the show as guests, that they could look and very quickly see who's been on the show, you know.
You can have a page specifically for a bio. You can have a page which has a form so people can fill. And one of the things that we've realized in this podcast is how difficult it is to kind of have that back and forth communication with people. And also with all of the different podcast platforms, to your earlier point, it's great to just have one. Go to chadandsteve.com if you want to see, or go to your favorite podcast platform. I guess the only issue with like the Spotify listings is it's literally just a list of your episodes and then kind of like a description. The freedom that you get with a website is it's a website. So you can kind of make it look exactly like you want. You can give more context. You can provide like an in-depth about us section. And to your point, that really helps when someone's deciding whether or not to go onto a podcast.
Why do you think some of these big podcasts don't bother with a website then?
Because since we have one, there is just as much argument to its useless. It's a waste of time. It's difficult to sometimes update because you just, when you launch a podcast in, what do we use now? What's the program that we use?
For WordPress. Our
podcast? No, sorry, for the actual podcast.
Oh, for this podcast, we use Anchor.
Anchor.
Anchor. Anchor.
So, I mean, as soon as you press a button in Anchor, you upload an MP3 file, essentially, and you press a button and it goes to everywhere. It automatically goes to Apple Podcasts and updates that. So that's easy. It's always a bit difficult to have to go to the website, add a thing, and especially when the website only gets, 12 visits a day or something like that. However, the larger thought being, from a best practice standpoint, especially because websites don't cost a lot of money, even though there's a bit of work, you know, it might be in a week of your time dedicated to like set everything up. On an ongoing basis, it probably won't be a whole lot of work. It's a bit of a hassle, but I think it's worth it for the off chance that we might have had a guest on this show in the past 70 episodes who made that decision because they went and they saw a website and for whatever reason that just had more about us. It talks about you, what your channel is, talks about me, what our channel is, talks about what we do on the podcast. And as much as like you can go on Spotify and see all our different podcasts, it doesn't really, like outside of that one paragraph, which is like Chad and Steve have creators on and da-da-da-da. We had way more space to kind of expand upon that, and it also still makes it feel like it's in kind of like in your control, like as in that's something that you can control.
Well, it sort of also begs a larger question, kind of what we were talking about last week with websites, is if you're a YouTuber, assuming you're not selling products, if you're just a YouTuber, should you really have a website? And again, is it just the same thing? Because I mean, who would go to it and why? But everybody seems to have one, which just seems odd to me.
The best part, so we had a website even before we had a YouTube channel. The website was kind of the first thing, and then it kind of like after a while it led to some videos. And I get it. That was a different time, and websites were way more important than they kind of are now. But it's so cheap now to get a website because places like Squarespace or whatever, just like it's all a template. You know, so for like $40 to buy a template, and then however much per month to access Squarespace. It ends up being incredibly, so it's not that whole thought of like, well, we don't have $2,500 to to put towards it. And when you're on YouTube, one of the first things that you learn is like, this is great. It's wonderful to have 1 million subscribers on YouTube, but appreciate that those are 1 million YouTube subscribers. It's like your followers on Instagram. They are as good as Instagram is going to allow them to be. There's a bunch of filters in between you and the people that quote unquote you are reaching. The one thing that I know 100% about websites is that when people are there, I own everything. All that land is mine. I sit on the rocking chair and you can explore all the ads I get full tilt for, or I make the ads go through to places that I specifically want them to go. I can put out things on my website to extract is a very cold word, but get email addresses off of people. So therefore I can start building up a newsletter email list perhaps. And that at the end of the day is worth, you know, our email list of 100,000 people is worth way more than our 1.9 million subscribers on YouTube, as much as that's way more of an impressive number. So for me, it's always been a website is just like, that's your portfolio. Like no matter what you're doing, if you are a YouTuber, and even YouTube has like an About Us page and like, right, it has more available to it. But at the same time, you would probably want even more than that. You want to have something which is like 100% under your control, especially if you're doing this for, you know, a living.
What do you think of the idea of, this is something I was kind of also considering, having a, using Patreon as your website, but not even requiring a paid membership. Can you even do that on Patreon? Can you just have free membership? Anybody can sign up?
That is an excellent question, Steve. Can you just have a free membership?
And
it's,
so you would just, in other words, you're still, you would get their, you know, you would get them to come to the site. They're there because they want,
right,
to be there.
Right.
If they want to, I guess, support you, they could financially, but really everything is just free. But it's a place where you could just put all of that same information and all the episodes and whatnot.
I mean, you could also just charge like $1 a month for the sake of, maybe the platform has rules where it's like, clearly we want to make money, so we don't make it absolutely.
Oh, right. But I forgot about Patreon. Oh, yeah. I guess they got to make money.
They would probably need to. So I guess,
You don't want to charge anything? What? No.
Right. When you overthink it, everybody would be there. It's just setting up their free Patreon page. However, to your point, like the cheapest one that you can possibly do, 99 cents a year, right, or like whatever it is, just to have it be where there is a transaction and there's whatever. But to your point, it's like, here's this one catch-all place. I mean, the good thing about Patreon is all of the structure is done. You don't need to worry about menu systems and da-da-da-da. Yeah. However, to our earlier point.
They all look alike.
Yeah. And again, you're on now a subdomain. It's on patreon.com/
Still not Steve Ramson. Yeah.
And that's the rub. That's why we pushed for a website for this podcast, or I pushed for this website for this podcast.
No, I think we both thought we should have.
Yeah, one, yeah. We both thought it was a good idea. And it's a very old school. We're both old school web designers too, we're used to kind of that being a very traditional step for anybody getting online. And as much as, especially now, when you search for stuff, website, there's such a discrepancy in quality websites, like quality, yeah, review websites. Like if you're looking for a vacuum now, the amount
that's what
of,
we were talking about last week.
Yeah,
right?
We were. Here
it's
we
just
go
impossible.
Again.
Yeah.
It's all Amazon scraper websites, whatever. No one's actually trying to build a website brand outside of, like, I know there's some like audio video, like really like the places with massive forums and huge user bases, which have built up over years and years and years. But there's nothing new coming out of like, hey, here's a great resource for like consumers who are looking,
yeah,
to purchase things for their home. And it's not about pointing someone to go get an affiliate, you know, whatever. It's literally there because the value in this company is giving good information.
Right.
And that's tough. That's really tough. It's really tough to not want to like chase views and like whatever and actually just double down on like providing good content. But it's been our North Star at Clean My Space for a very long time.
Yeah.
So are you going to get a website, I guess? At the end of the day? Are you going to go through with it?
I don't know. I would like to. It's also, I also got kind of frustrated with it because I'm just so out of practice at making websites, even Squarespace, even though it's easy. It's like, well, now I need like a web or a podcast plugin or something, you know? And I'm like, well, where do I get that? How do I do? And then I thought, well, do I just hire somebody to do this? And I'm like, do I really want to spend the money for that? And so I'm just kind of going around and around. I probably will eventually, because I do think it's kind of good for, and I think this is the main reason. If it was just a show of me talking, I probably wouldn't really need it. Or if it was just me, something like that. But since I have guests on that show, I think it makes it a nice, easy place, like our show, for when we're asking people to be on the show, that they can quickly look and it's like,
right,
a collage of faces, and they might see somebody they recognize, and they're like, oh yeah, I know these people. So clearly these two guys are legit based on who they've had on the show. I don't know. What have you been up to this week?
We are in the space of just like returning to the basics. I've been working on printables. It seems like this is 2015 over here, but
what kind of printables does a cleaning company do?
So a spring cleaning printable, and right now I'm working on, so we have a Melissa's cleaning system is called the three-wave cleaning system, and it's something that we've talked about in countless YouTube videos and in a book way back in 2017.
The purple book.
But after a book, after a few years, there's a time that passes where the information and the restrictions on the content of said book expire, and the book kind of becomes free for interpretation, at least for the people who wrote it, as far as the publishing company is concerned. So we've gotten to a point where we now have access to all of this new information. We're trying to find a new outlet to put it in. Every spring, we've had a spring cleaning printable for, I say printable, it's more like an ebook. It's like 25, 30 pages. It's like not quite as big as a book, but it's like a pretty meaty thing that you can buy. And every spring, we sell, you know, quite a few of these ebooks during the springtime. So this year, we want to be prepared and not just have it be us selling printables and ebooks because we happen to have a couple, and every year we whatever. We're actually putting more of a concerted effort into it because further to the earlier conversation of people not just wanting to get their information through a video or whatnot, and not maybe wanting to go through and buy like a full-on book or like whatever. They just want something which is more focused on just one thing. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm working on.
Like, is it like a checklist too? Like the things you need to clean? And
I think of it as like trying to publish a small book, like, and that's why I keep calling them ebooks. Like, I'm trying to make it be about 30 to 50 pages, include some checklists, include some DIY recipes. So you basically can buy this, you can learn how to make some recipes, so you don't have to go out and buy a bunch of cleaners. It gives you all of the techniques that my wife teaches, and it teaches you how to go through and clean a room in a three-wave kind of way, which you can adapt to any particular room. So it's kind of just like one routine that you learn and you know, go out there and apply to everything. So that's one of the things I've been working on. And that is a smaller part of a large thing, which we are working on, which is like a program. For a while, we've been wanting to do something like this. 2.5 or 3 years ago, we released, or Melissa released a program for people who were looking to start a cleaning business.
So yeah.
Because that's where our whole discipline comes from. We opened a cleaning company way back in, 2006 or 2007 or something like that. And over the years, we've learned a lot about running a cleaning company. So she put a whole program together, and that was our first exposure to doing a program.
That was extensive. I mean, it was like highly produced and everything.
And you would know because it was done through the same team that did your both of your courses. And so now we're at a place where we've been doing the YouTube thing for a very long time. We've repurposed our content a few times over. We know kind of like what our trajectory is on the YouTube channel and everything else that we do. And we just wanted that one kind of North Star product or program that we could be like, if this is the extent of what we have to offer, and this ends up becoming a bit of a swan song, as in like the last really large thing we have to offer, outside of we've gone into products, we've done the book, we've done full scale content, short scale, like we've done all of that. Now it's at a point where if someone really wants to just like buy one thing, which has a price tag associated with it, and it'll take you from not knowing how to clean your house to knowing how to clean your house, that's the other thing that we're working on right now.
Nice.
I have a lot of questions for you about that, because you is the majority of your, this is blunt, your income basically derived from, like, is the majority from your programs?
Yeah, absolutely.
At this point?
Yeah, they do really, really well. And it's all, it really helps. And you've got a pretty established email list, don't you? You've got a pretty good size.
Yeah, we've been doing the email list for a while.
And then you could probably, with a good lead magnet, you know, you could probably even triple the size of that if you really double down on it. Once you get that, then it's really, that really helps to sell. It's just an ongoing thing.
You know? And so you're doing it on Instagram. Are they Instagram photos or is Instagram video? And what do you actually share for the ads?
The ads are, they do stories. We do Instagram photos. There might be some videos. I'm not really sure. I don't really have a whole lot of contact with that. And the Facebook too. I know Facebook though. Holy crap. Facebook is the best way to advertise. The conversion is incredible on that. Like, we don't advertise on YouTube anymore. We used to do some YouTube ads, but they're just too expensive for the low click-through rate you get on those compared to Instagram and Facebook, you know.
Do you find is there a large percentage of people who don't know you outside of coming across a woodworking program and are interested in woodworking, so therefore they get to know you through that? Or is it still the majority of these people coming and being like, ah, it's Steve, and this is Steve's course, so of course I'll do this?
No, at this point, it's mostly people who don't know anything about woodworking for mere mortals. They see the ads and they're interested. And it's kind of funny because once in a while, I'll look at those ads and I'll see like comments on them, and sometimes it'd be like, I don't know if this is any good. Does anybody know? And then somebody else will just chime in like, oh yeah, I've known Steve's been doing this for years. Yeah. And so they're like vouching for me in the comments, which is pretty cool, you know? And so
does it change your perspective of how you put the, especially now, if you're thinking about doing another program, does it change your perspective about how you kind of like present that information? Do you try to like realign it to having people listen to it without, like, through the lens of them knowing you and not being too familiar with them?
Exactly. So that was the balance I really tried to work out with all of the courses. And from the very first course I did, the Weekend Woodworker course, it was this balance between, I knew that I wanted this to be for people who have never done woodworking and who didn't know me. Mm-hmm. So that was the key thing. So this is brand new to anybody. But at the same time, especially in those initial, you know, part of the course where I first launched it, it would be mostly people who already knew me. So I wanted to make sure that there was enough of like stuff people already knew of me and woodworking for mere mortals, little bits that I do and little things that, I don't know, the quirky stuff that I do that I've done all these years, to keep that in there. So it's trying to, you know, be approachable for people who know me as well as people who don't know me. But mostly I think it's really important that it's for people who don't know you. It's easy to think because, you know, we're on YouTube for so long that, oh, everybody knows us already. And it's always humbling when constantly people are finding my courses and stuff who don't know anything about woodworking for mere mortals.
And I think we talked about that in the last episode, us going through and reintroducing ourselves at the beginning of, like, we literally just changed that familiarity, that comfort that you have. And I think it's really important on YouTube, because I think you do get comfortable after you do this for a long period of time. To your point, you're kind of like, I know who I'm talking to, and I know what they like, and I know what they don't like. And it's kind of, and we even, we talked about in the last episode, like what we thought our audience was because of the avatar that we've built in our head over the very long period of time that we've been doing this. And it's very disingenuous to look at your audience from 2017 and still kind of like drag through those stereotypes and like you thinking you know who these people are. And when you look at like the past 90 day snapshot and you realize how many new faces and people who have no idea who you are watching the content. Has it changed your perspective on your YouTube content?
Well, I see, the first thing, I use YouTube more as a marketing tool now. It's kind of way I think of it as trying to send people to make purchases, and it sort of just makes sense. I would much rather do that than try to sell mattresses or shavers or something on YouTube, you know? So I have much more of a focus. But I think the important thing also, if you're going to be doing that course, is think of it in terms of longevity, which I go back and look at those, and that first course came out in 2017, and I look at that from today's eyes, and there's still nothing I would change about it. It's just as valid today as it was then. I don't like how I look, and I'm always uncomfortable looking at myself, you know, 5 years ago or whatever, but the material and the way it's presented, man, I'm so happy with the way that turned out and the way we just nailed it. And it's like, it has everything in there that I wanted to have in there. And it just is the perfect way to learn woodworking. I sound like I'm doing a sales pitch here, but
do you have an affiliate code you could share with us, Steve?
Yeah.
Was there something that led you like to the logical progression of the next project, or excuse me, the next program? And were you mindful of not having the programs kind of cannibalize each other, or like learn how to accent?
So there's three courses, and the first one, you know, we hit it out of the park, and then because it was for total beginning woodworkers, so the logical next step is, okay, now we take it to like next level, like moderate level woodworking, and that course didn't do as well. So then on the third course, we just did something completely different. We did how to set up a workshop, which did really, really well. So the first and the third courses are definitely our best sellers. We still sell that next level course powered up, but nowhere near as much as those other two. And the reason why is because it's not solving a problem.
Right.
The first course and the third course both solve problems. Right. The first course, I've never done woodworking. I don't know where do I get started? Here's a step-by-step approach. The third course, how to set up a workshop in a limited space with limited amount of money. And that's it was like something a lot of people had a problem doing. And so I'm like, well, I'll show you exactly how to do that, rather than just like, here's some projects that you can learn to take your skills a little bit higher.
Did that come from a drying up, or like an awareness of the sponsored video wheel of disappointment? Yeah. Or just like did it come at a time that you were disillusioned with sponsored videos, so you were looking to put clearly some call to action or some type of monetization to the videos, but you decided to enable yourself to like have full control over that and be the, here's the thing that I'm now directing towards, and I've stopped talking. So I guess my question is, did it come in and out of time that you're like, I don't want to do sponsored videos anymore, so I need to find this? Or did you find this and it's like, great, now I don't need to worry about sponsored videos anymore?
Well, it was a little bit of both, but I'm kind of a believer in this philosophy of, you know, life is a river and you just kind of flow down it and things happen. And I've always managed to have like key events in my life have happened when they should have. And I don't know what it is, but it felt like coming up with that courses, those, or the first course, and meeting the people who could help me out with that, it came at the time when I was already starting to get frustrated doing these brand deals and the sponsored spots. And there was definitely some overlap there, but it felt so much better to have my own product and not have to try to sell my audience to somebody else.
Do you remember the last time you did a sponsored video? When was the last time you did just like?
I have done some. I've done some of those, you know, shout out ads, you know, which is just like the 60-second integration. I just did one. I did one on my podcast for Manscaped. That was kind of fun. Oh. And I did one on a video for, I think it was an insurance, Next. Was it? Yeah, mm-hmm. Next Insurance, mm-hmm. Something like that. And that was back in October. Also for a podcast, I did a video version of the podcast. I didn't want to put any on my regular videos, so I thought, well, I'll try the podcast. But they don't, you know, video podcasts just don't get enough views, so the sponsors aren't really that interested in doing those. And I thought, well, I don't really need to do that.
Do you remember the last time you had like a full integration, like a brand reach out and be like, we want you to make a video about our
thing? Yeah, that was probably Craig Tools back in maybe 2017 or so, 2016, 17.
Been a minute.
Yeah. Been a long time, yeah.
Do you remember your first brand deal or your first sponsored video?
Yeah, Microjig.
Was Microjig the very, very first?
Yes. Yeah, they sent me their Microjig gripper and just thought asked me what I thought of it. And so I did a quick little thing for them and that was it.
Do you remember what year it was?
Mm,
or how big you were?
Maybe 20. No, it was small. I was real small. And they were a small company too at that time. It was probably 2010, maybe.
I mean, everybody was small on the platform in 2010, arguably.
But as a tool company, they were small. You know, they had just pretty much gotten started. So it was kind of cool to be in. And now they're doing really
well. How long did that kind of relationship, how many times did we hear a wonderful intro? I mean, you like, yeah. if there's some things that just happen and they get carried, and I still see to this day people like acknowledging that as part of the woodworking from your mortals like culture. It's like, so it's part of You did those for
somebody did a super cut of all of those. They took all of those and made a video of all those. I thought that was really cool.
You've sent me that video. It's hilarious. Isn't it kind of surreal to see yourself?
It's really weird. Yeah. What's your experience been like? And you guys still doing sponsored spots?
We do. We're in a really unique position where, because Melissa's such an expert, and because her talking about something has like so much more value, even just outside of the YouTube landscape for a company, we were always incredibly picky with who we did deals with, as in we didn't really do deals with smaller companies. And we were very fortunate enough to be in a space where there's a bunch of multi-billion dollar companies like Procter & Gamble.
Well, let me interrupt you for just a second. Have all of your sponsored spots been for cleaning related products, or did you guys ever get into these like Squarespace and this kind of things that people
Audible do? We did. Remember when Audible had a really good run? Yeah. Everybody was doing Audible ads.
Everybody was doing Audible.
And all you had to do, and we loved them because they were like, here's your page, here's your code. The person gets a discount. They get a free ebook and then 20% off of their first month or something like that. We get, we got some money to do it. It wasn't a huge brand integration, but it was enough to be like, this is well worth mentioning this in the video. And then all you had to do is like pick out a book and just talk about why you like that book.
I did a lot of those.
It's just a fun way to talk about books that you liked recommending, and you could bring up like da 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 da. So I loved those integrations, and those were like the only ones. We never did the Casper beds. We kind of wanted to do Casper beds because we thought that there was whatever, but it just...
I did three of those. I did three. Three mattresses I got. I did actually a lot of those ads, but I got three mattresses from them.
Do you still have those mattresses?
Yeah, they're actually really good mattresses. They're super comfortable, I think.
So we did, but our biggest was we got on Dyson's radar very early.
Oh, that's pretty big.
And this little company called Procter & Gamble, who literally spends $1 billion a month in advertising and marketing. So it was very, very nice. And it was 2013, I think. We had been going for a couple of years. We had about 25,000 subscribers. We were invited to Brandcast by YouTube, and that was like crazy.
So describe that. What was Brandcast?
Brandcast is a thing that they have every year, and they bring, at the time that we went, they brought their top, I'm putting that in massive amounts of 37 quotation marks, their top creators at the time, or actually I believe it's who they considered like high potential is what they kept calling us.
YouTube brought
okay. we got a partner manager very, very early on. Once we put into a bunch of like Google and YouTube beta programs to test out features, and we got access to some other creators and doing roundtables with YouTube, and then YouTube started inviting us to go to their New York offices or their California offices to go and sit down with 120 people who were from Procter & Gamble, and they would put three select... So this was the very early days of influencer marketing. They were testing putting brands together with creators. And in 2013, I think it was either their second or third Brandcast that they had ever done, because it was still at the time... This was at the time that they were starting to put billboards up in New York City, and you'd see like YouTubers on the bus, and it was like Lily Singh and Michelle... Actually, it wasn't even Lily Singh. It was Michelle Phan and... Jenna Marbles and that kind of those people. And so they gathered all of a few hundred of their top creators, or at least creators which really fit the mix for... We got in there because we were the only cleaning channel, and they knew that they had a bunch of cleaning companies who were interested in this. So Melissa was a great choice to put up there. We went to New York City, and we saw a concert. And Snoop Dogg and Macklemore, and there were some other people. Jeffrey Katzenberg was there. Eric Schmidt, CEO of Google, was there. And they did a big thing, and they talked about the numbers and how many people are watching YouTube versus TV, which was the huge statistic back then that they used to love to talk about.
That was a big thing.
They're like, do you know people will soon start watching more YouTube than traditional TV? And that's foreign for us now, because now we're like, who? What? Like, I watch YouTube on my TV. I don't even think about like traditional TV. Anyways, they shared all, and they've been doing the same thing for years. But back then, the numbers were really, really impactful, and it was very new. No one knew whatever. So after this, we were in this kind of hangar. It was actually a hangar. this big space, but it was turned into like an event space. And we saw this show and they did a bunch of talks and da da da. And then they filed all of these people from the auditorium onto these big yachts, which they had docked on the Brooklyn River, whatever the one is on the east side of New York. We all got on those and then they started to sail around and they served food. And the whole idea was to have these brand representatives start mingling with creators. And from that, just they will just mesh. They will they will form brand deals and everyone will be happy. And what ended up happening is it was kind of like a grade seven dance where all the boys stood on one side and all the girls stood
all
on the
YouTubers were on one side and the brands were on the other. Is that
and
how it worked?
I will remember to this day being standing with a plate in my hand because they were encouraging us to like, hey, just go and mingle. So don't sit. Don't get locked into like finding another creator. And the only creator that we knew there was... we met there and we kind of got to know Laura Vitale, Laura in the Kitchen, and her husband, Joe. And we kind of like ended up doing exactly that, just kind of sitting in the corner eating our meal. But there was this time before then where I was kind of standing, doing my best to be like, all right, I'll stand here. And but all of the people who were like in the industry people, all the media people and brand people, they were all just hanging out and being like, look at this, we just saw Snoop Dogg and look at how fancy this food is and we're on a boat in the there's the New York Sky.
See, I think that YouTube was smart to bring Snoop Dogg and the and kind of traditional celebrities because for the brands this had to be a pretty big leap to think, why do we want to get with these YouTube people that we don't really know anything about?
So they're putting on a huge show. And if you remember, this was back in the day that Snoop Dogg was starting his YouTube channel. So it was very particular why Snoop was there. He was doing this and he ended up doing very well because he put work into his YouTube channel. Like he actually did his YouTube channel. And Macklemore was only big because his like his music career was predicated upon the video which was on YouTube for... his big song, I'm going to pop some tags or whatever it's called.
Pop some tags, right?
Yeah. And it was wonderful, but you could see that like at the time, these dudes were at the top of the hill. It was like, took the breath out of me when Snoop Dogg like walked on the stage. But yeah, I'll never forget just being, on a boat, holding a plate in my hand and shoveling some, and I was standing beside, what's his name? Kev Jumba. That was it. 3 million subscribers on one side, and then just over here within I could throw a meatball at her was Michelle Phan with her at that time like 8 million subs and all of these brand people with all of this sway being put into this position to actually meet literally some of the most important creators on the planet at the time, and they're too busy, you know, wasn't it a great show, wasn't Snoop Dogg amazing, what's gonna happen after this?
Did everybody eventually warm up to each other and mingle?
No, it was just too short. I think in their heads, they were like, it's just going to make so much sense, but they didn't facilitate it. They were like, hey, go on the boats and this is the time that you can whatever. And everybody's like, great, this is the time that we eat. Everybody ate and then everybody stood with the groups that they were comfortable with and kind of like looked out. And that's not to say that I'm sure there was probably a bunch of brand deals that happened. My experience from it was very overwhelming because it felt like we were like, and even the larger... The larger YouTubers, Jenna Marbles was there, and da da da. Like no one looked completely comfortable. I was in line in the for the buffet behind I Justine, and it was just like there was no real like here's the like a trade show might kind of make it where it's like this is the area, this is the zone for the creators, and this is the whatever zone, and this is the mingling
How
zone.
Weird.
They didn't kind of make that clear, but. We were grateful for the opportunity and we like whatever. And from that, we ended up started working with Procter & Gamble. We've worked with kind of Procter & Gamble in one form or another.
So you did beat a company there then.
I don't think it was from that. No. It was in and around the time that we were doing a lot of stuff like that. So it was probably just as easy to say it could have been one of the times that we went to New York and literally sat in front of these people and told them the value of working with influencers. And
would you say that was like the most exciting time of your YouTube experience?
1,000,000%. If that wasn't a period where we had all of this interest, we would not have had the energy and the interest or the excitement about like them acknowledging that we had something kind of special and allowing us to grow it without putting all the pressures of like, oh, you need to be a certain amount of subscribers and da 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 da. And I remember we did, when we got the invite to Brandcast, we didn't even know what it was. It just came from YouTube. And we were fortunate enough to be friends with another creator called Josh Katz, who had a has a skateboarding channel on YouTube. And he's like, do you know what Brandcast is? Because you might really want to go to Brandcast. It's like, it's like literally everyone who's like, this is like the top, like, how did you manage to, anyways, like, go and do it. So we went and did it. And that was kind of the first time that we realized that, like, YouTube's very interested in making these things happen for kind of the right channels.
YouTube felt different. Didn't it feel like YouTube had all this excitement and momentum, and there was so much like optimism, like, wow, this is where it's at right now, right here is happening.
Yeah.
And everybody needs to be working it on YouTube.
There was a lot of self-awareness about what we were doing too. It was a bunch of YouTubers talking about YouTubers, happy to be YouTubers. And now YouTube is more of a platform, which is, it's like kind of saying that you have a show on Netflix, that you're a Netflixer.
Yeah.
And early on in YouTube, like, it was the truth. The thing that drew us all together was the platform, and we were happy. And many people still are, and we still consider ourselves YouTubers. However, we only consider ourselves YouTubers because it's way more convenient for people to tell people what you do.
Yeah.
Because that clearly resonates with people much more than I'm an entrepreneur who also happens to have a YouTube channel.
I think in the early days of VidCon was kind of like that too. It was those first few years of VidCon was so special. And I remember going to the first VidCon I went to, and even though it was pretty crazy by the time I had gone there, but it was still a YouTuber thing. And it was cool to just like meet everybody who you were fans with, who you'd seen, and you could talk to them. And then that whole thing just got out of control. And then, of course, the Greens sold it. And now it's Viacom owns it. Now it's just a big thing. I haven't been in a number of years.
Everything just kind of became a big thing, right? Everything kind of became the business, and everything kind of became like... And now YouTube, the word YouTuber, literally used to represent... This is an outsider or a fringe creator who is part of something which is so important that, like, you know, you don't have an actor running around being like, I'm on NBC. My show's on NBC. I love NBC. But you had YouTubers being like, we're YouTubers and we love other YouTubers and we say that we're YouTubers and we identify the platform in such a loving way because we all wanted to be like, this is it. This is us being able to have a level playing field. We control everything. We say whatever. And now everybody's coming to us and being like, what do you guys have to do? And now it seems to me, and this is old man waving his fist at the sky, but it seems that it's like, we need a YouTube channel because we need that. We need the money that comes from a YouTube channel.
So much of this seemed to change with that last cringy YouTube Rewind. Wasn't that kind of the death nail? That was like, wow, okay, this is it. Because it used to be those YouTube Rewinds were so cool. You would pick out all the people you knew and then half of them you'd say, I've never seen these people before. And, you know, it was fun. That was a community.
It was the YouTube community. The first cringy one, which I think was 2019. And then the one right before then, which I think was 2018, where it was the last one, which kind of had an authentic kind of like, oh, wait, it's still clearly about like YouTubers who are whatever. And then it changed to, oh, it's, you know, James Corden and it's Will Smith and it's The Rock and it's.
Oh, that was the most disliked video on YouTube.
They started with Will Smith. They deserved every single thing that they got. They had one job.
It was,
that was
so memed. It was so memed of him going, ah.
They could have fixed everything by starting the next year with PewDiePie and literally just been like, so self-aware of it. And they could have switched it around, but they doubled down on like, people want clips of the late night talk shows and they want Jimmy Kimmel and no.
It was like a sizzle reel, you know, like they were showing it. They wanted to show that to potential big media companies. Like, look at who's on our platform.
And you know what it is? They never talk about YouTube aside from their forced outros or their forced end cards.
They don't know anything about YouTube. And that's a big thing. They don't understand YouTube.
And you can tell that Jimmy Kimmel is recording his outro for YouTube along with a whole bunch of other sound bites.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't show that Jimmy Kimmel gives two hoots about YouTube. And to your point earlier, what was different and what made it exciting is because when we were there, the reason why it was so cool to see Snoop Dogg on stage is because he had just started his YouTube. Like, he wanted to be a part of what we were doing. And that was what was cool. We were all in that audience, and all of those creators had built up this to become something which was worthy of an event like this and worthy of this attention. And at that time, we truly know that it was built off of like the most organic of means. We did it because we were all just waiting for a platform to be able to release content on, and we did it right. And now it's self-aware. It became self-aware. It was like, oh, I am YouTube. So now it turned into what it did.
Nostalgia moment. Remember Google Video?
Whoa.
That was a thing. It was like before YouTube. Google had, it overlapped because they had, that you would go to Google, the homepage. You know how like now they have the image tab, yeah, images, and yeah, so they had one for videos. And it was basically kind, but it was just a list of videos, you know, thumbnails, yeah, basically. And
what happened to Google Video?
I think they just finally just shut it down. They're like, well, you know, we've got YouTube. We don't.
This is so confusing.
Maybe it's because when they came up with, here's another one I was thinking of the other day, YouTube Red and YouTube Originals. Do they still do that? Is that still a thing? I know YouTube Red became YouTube Premium, but there was a while where they had, you could go to a movie theater and they would have ads for YouTube Red Originals, YouTube Originals, and it would be some of their best YouTubers making really, really cringy.
They did that a while ago. They had Prank vs. Prank. I think PewDiePie had an original series, Jacksepticeye. I'm sure all of the Vsauce. Right.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I can only say no because I can't think of any current creator that I know or follow who's like, hey, go check out my originals or my YouTube Red series.
No, nobody was watching that stuff, I don't think.
Just assimilate all of that into just like the experience. It's just the YouTube experience, and they stopped worrying about, I don't know.
I know people got a little upset when that came out because it was like you had to pay this extra to see the people you'd already been watching on YouTube for a long time.
Do you pay for YouTube Premium? Have we talked about this? You do.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I've done that for years.
For a long time.
I started with YouTube Red. When they first launched YouTube Red, I'm like, oh, hell yeah, I'll get rid of the ads.
What's the majority of your viewing experience now? What do you spend them, like when you need to sit down and watch something, where do you go?
I mostly watch movie reviews, movie analysis stuff.
But like on YouTube?
Oh, you mean,
yeah. Like when you sit down and you turn the TV on, where did you go to Netflix, Crave? Like what's your jam?
TV, well, we got Roku, so we'll flip around. It'll go from, I swear I spend half my time just like flipping around trying to figure out what do I want to see.
Does it seem like there's so much stuff, but there's just nothing to watch?
It's so frustrating. I'll hit Netflix, Prime. We have them all. We have Hulu. I got to go through these sometimes. I think, why do I have all these services that I never watch? I got Disney Plus, I've got Hulu, I've got Peacock and Paramount and all these things, and I sign up for them for like one particular reason, and then I never watch them again after that thing. I signed up for like Peacock because I wanted to watch the Olympics, and now that's over, and I think, well, why do I keep this around? I don't know.
For all of that quality NBC content, I guess.
Yeah,
I'm not too sure.
I gotta go through that and kind of weed out the junk.
That's funny that you say that. I did one of those inventories yesterday, and I was flipping through. I'm like, I have Disney Plus. Well, I have Disney Plus because I have a 4-year-old. That makes sense. I was on board with getting Disney Plus because they also have the Fox catalog, which means you can get Simpsons and Bob's Burgers. So I'm like, okay, I can see that one being whatever it is, $10 a month. And okay, she really likes it. Plus there's some stuff on there. And then we got Crave, which is, I think, just a Canadian thing. But it's like, we don't get HBO directly that way. I think you have HBO Max or something along those lines.
Yeah, I get that.
We have
too.
A Canadian kind of filter for it, as it were. It's like, we get those shows, but we get like a few of them, and it's through Crave. So that's another $20. And that's only for Curb Your Enthusiasm. Netflix is probably the worst out of all of them. They're the biggest and they should have the most content.
Yeah.
I spend more time flipping around, just being disappointed, and then just reluctantly going to Disney Plus to watch a predictable Simpsons episode versus literally trying to find something new with the largest movie studio and television studio on earth. Because all of the stuff, like outside of like the Queen's Gambit or the Crown, like clearly they have some shows which are whatever, but like once you've moved through those, man, how many times can you just watch RuPaul's Drag Race?
Yeah, it does seem like they throw a lot out there and just try to see what sticks, you know, and occasionally they'll have that winner of a show. I think mostly The channel I watch the most really is Shudder, but I usually just watch that alone because nobody else in the house likes to watch Shudder, but because it's all the horror movies on there.
And it's best to watch those alone because then you get extra scared.
But you know what I also really like is Tubi. Tubi is free and it's ads on it. It's kind of more like, but God, they've got some obscure movies on there. It's like the fastest growing. Now they're coming out with their own original content too, which is crazy.
There are a bunch of smaller apps. I want to say Haystack, but I could be completely wrong. Anyways, I've seen Tubi and there's a couple others and they'll usually be like, never heard of them before. And then you'll go in, it's like, oh, look at all the great 80s movies they have. Or look at all the... Yes. Yeah, I think there's a huge space for like all the classic movies because that's sometimes what Melissa will say. She'll be like, can you just show me a movie from back when you were young? Like a good movie because we're really tired of watching crappy new movies. Yeah. So we're going back.
Do you watch YouTube on your TV?
Funny you bring that up. Out of everything, we probably now watch more YouTube and literally just YouTube content, as in I'll just watch, you know, whatever, your videos or Epic Gardening or something like I'll just sit and watch that now over trying to get into a new series or
we do a lot of that too, and it's kind of a thing we do because like Wyatt, my son, he'll have like his things that he watches and he has things that he thinks I might enjoy also, and so like if we have time and we sit down together, we just Chromecast, and so we could each take turns kind of from our phone just casting, here's a video you might like, oh yeah, here's a cool one I enjoy, and then there's some that we both really like together, like we'll watch Joel Haver or something like that, and they're just, it's kind of a fun way to watch TV, really.
And it's so rare that you find a show that you're willing to watch for an extended period of time repeatedly anyways. The cool thing about YouTube is you can go from Joel Haver to Clean My Space to like whatever, to this, to that, to watching, you can come across full-length documentaries and movies and whatnot, but it's the discovery mechanism and the freedom to be like, oh, I just want to watch a couple, you know, funny videos, and then I want to watch this one thing. And then while I was coming across, the recommended engine is great. So it's like, oh, hey, here's another thing that I would be interested. So the viewing experience seems way better than when it's like, do you want to watch something on Netflix? Cool. And then you just sit down and you're like, scroll.
Yeah, because then you're thinking, well, if it's a movie, then I'm going to have to commit myself to
an hour and 47 minutes. And more, some movies are like 2.5 hours now.
Oh.
Or committing to a show and then just having that show be strong. We recently came across one, thankfully. And if anybody's looking for a very funny show, it's called Kath and Kim. It's an Australian show from the early 2000s. Just genuinely funny, well-written, all of the rest. And when we came across it, we're like, great. And now we're like binging that. But now you binge through a show within like three days. You get through all four seasons of the show you love. And then you're left scrolling again and looking for what's next. And that's what I really like about YouTube, is because they always have something new and different and whatnot to serve up for me.
One of the ways I use YouTube, though, is when I'm scrolling through, I'll be eating lunch or whatever, I use that watch later feature a lot. So, but the problem is that it's like a queue that I have so filled. I probably have like, you know, hundreds
now it's
of videos on there. And then I don't get to them. But at least that's like the next step. It's like, hey, you get into my watch later queue, you've made it.
You've arrived.
But it still hasn't gotten to the point where I'm actually going to watch it. But I do. I need a better way. It's kind of like my email. And, you know, I'll just like, if it gets past that first page of email, it's probably not going to get a response.
The drops below. Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's unread, starred, important, flagged, nothing.
I do all those games with myself. I've used the stars. And so I'll read the email and I think, yeah, I should probably respond to this. But it requires more thought.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, you know what I'll do is I'll just mark it as unread. Yeah. So I have all these bold messages going down my inbox. But yeah, once you're past that first page, forget it. You're gone. You're history. You're dead to me.
if I were to look at your inbox right now, how many unread messages would there be?
Oh shit. Let me see. I'm gonna check real close. Okay, so pulling it up, I have, so, oh man, this is bad. 6,054.
Whoo! You have some messages to get back to, Steve.
That's just in my primary inbox, I think.
You should sort by date and then oldest and just see how long that one person has been waiting for a response from Steve.
I should respond to one of those that's like from 2007 or something.
Sure, I'm interested in a sponsored deal. I said it in the last episode, so I think it'd be a wonderful way to round out this episode. I really, really wanted to do Steve Ramsey, fact or fiction. And tell everyone who's listening, Steve, do you have any idea what I'm about to do?
No, I don't.
He really doesn't.
I'm a little nervous.
So I think, what did we do last time? Last time or last episode.
How well do you know your channel?
How well do you know your channel? So I'm really getting into like trying to find little fun things to do. And one of the things that is very popular and has become more and more popular over the past few years are celebrity net worth or celebrity bio websites. For those of us who are not, you know, Wheezy Waiter and have our own Wikipedia pages to go and, you know, look at this information, I decided to go to an even more authoritative source, popularbio.com/Steve-Ramsey. And this is just one of those random ones. For those of you who are wondering, I typed in Steve Ramsey bio into YouTube, and this was the third result. So it's clearly pretty reputable. And it says it's talking about his net worth, and we're just going to expose it all right here on the podcast, Steve. But what I'm going to do, I've seen people do this on YouTube channels. Basically, they take people who have Wikipedia pages, they sit them down. They're like, fiction. Is this fact or fiction? So that's essentially what it is in a nutshell. However, we're not using Wikipedia. We're using the ever popular popularbio.com. All right, Steve, are you ready? Steve Ramsey was born in Chicago, Illinois.
That is true. Wow. How do we know this stuff?
I know. May 14th, 1966. He is the creator.
Correct.
There you go. Creator and host of Woodworking for Mere Mortals show and for Mere Mortals Network. Which is interesting. I'm not too sure what that means.
Wow, that's kind of old. But
Woodworking.
Yeah.
And so that was early on the Mere Mortals. The thought was to do a network, or just like at least refer to it as
exactly. That goes back to maybe 2012, 13. I thought formeremortals.net because I couldn't get .com, which sucked. And then I thought, well, then I could have home and garden for Mere Mortals, woodworking for, and my idea was to have all these four Mere Mortals things, but that never really panned out. And so then I went back to just the .com.
Well, it's been documented for history to be able
now
to.
Now it's there.
Yeah. Woodworking for Mere Mortals is a fun weekly how-to DIY YouTube series.
Well, they haven't seen my show in a while.
Which is now full of shorts, they say. No, I'm just kidding.
And hardly weekly.
That presents easy and fun projects that anyone can make. He has worked and made appearances with many online creators and celebrities, including Carrie Byron, who I believe was from...
Oh, that's weird. That's on there. Mythbusters. Yeah.
And Bethany Moda, which you have talked about on this podcast.
Wow.
Pretty cool, huh?
But that's an odd one that they would have that on there. I didn't really work with her. I was at VidCon with her.
It's interesting how they find some of this. I think a lot of the information is found through people's Instagram accounts.
Maybe so, yeah.
Anyways, before producing videos, he was a graphic designer and a commercial photographer. His design firm, ZRAM Media, began to produce woodworking for Mere Mortals. ZRAM. He has been building things out of wood since he was 12 years old.
Oh, I see what they're doing. A lot of this, that's kind of stuff would be on like my bio on my website or something. Because I recognize that language earlier on when it says fun and exciting or projects that anybody can do or something like that was exactly the wording I used on my website.
Age, height, and body measurements.
Oh, dear.
But they don't worry. Well, clearly we know your age because we can just, you know, deduce from the 1966
birthday.
I'm a
32B bra size.
Steve Ramsey height is unknown and weight is not available right now. Full body measurements, dress, and shoe size will be updated soon. So I'm going to flag this and we will address this at a later time. All right, two more. Who is Steve Ramsey dating? Steve Ramsey keeps his personal and love life private. Check back often as we will update this.
I ain't telling you who I'm dating.
All right, here's the last one, and here's the money shot, Steve.
Oh, no.
Here it is. Steve Ramsey's net worth.
Oh, God.
Here we are. According to Wikipedia, Forbes, they know, so they've done their research. IMDb and various online resources. Famous YouTube star Steve Ramsey.
Oh, God.
Famous YouTube star Steve Ramsey's net worth is. Do you want to take a guess before we?
I have no idea what they would say, if it's either really high or it's really low.
Well, you tell us, because famous YouTube star Steve Ramsey's net worth is $87 million. See how long he paused there? That was like, oh my gosh, they know. They know my date. And they know 87 is a very particular number, Steve. It's not like they were like 100 or 90. 87.
Well, I'll say it's somewhere between $1,000 and $87.
Thanks for narrowing it down, Steve. Yeah.
Wow, 87, that's an oddly specific number. They just throw these out there, don't they?
They really do.
Because there couldn't be any research that goes, I mean, how would they possibly know? I mean, some of these sites I've seen, they just go off of like presumed, they look at like their view counts or something, and then they just have like some sort of algorithm that gets like a very generic CPM maybe and does an AdSense.
Social Blade, yeah. They probably go on Social Blade. They take one of the average numbers. They multiply it by a bunch. They multiply it by this again. I don't know where they
come. And that's just probably AdSense strictly, which is just such a small portion of what I earn anyways.
Perhaps my bio would put a little perspective. I am certainly not nearly as famous as Steve Ramsey. Clearly, because I'm more of a like behind the scenes kind of dude. However, mm-hmm. I've certainly done enough to be on networthlist.org/Chad Reynolds. So I guess I'll do myself, Chad Reynolds, net worth, and Sally. Chad Reynolds is an entrepreneur with a net worth of $150 million.
God, you're killing it.
I've worked very hard, Steve. And if you continue to work
basically
hard.
Basically more than twice as hard as I have.
Yeah, you'll be in the nine figures soon. 13 million to go, Steve. Chad Reynolds was born on September 15th, 1976, which is impressive. That is correct.
Oh, you know, those are also Canadian dollars, I should point out.
Oh, so it's like $70 American. Chad Reynolds was born 1976, executive producer and co-founder of Clean My Space, a popular blog and YouTube channel focusing on cleaning hacks, lifestyle tips, and tricks. So far, so good. Executive producer and co-creator. Blah, blah, blah. Before fame. I'm still before fame. In 2011, he and his wife, Melissa, launched the Clean My Space YouTube channel in an effort to gain new clients for their cleaning business. And to your point, that's Steve, true. This is the stuff which is very impressive, because that's been mentioned in videos, but the person with that context didn't just find a random Instagram mm-hmm. post to find that piece of information. And there's one other the last point is kind of interesting. Trivia. He is an accomplished graphic designer. Now, I remember they just said, you're a graphic designer. And had his own design firm called MediaWorks from 2001 to 2007. Again, there's no way you would have known I had a design firm called 360 MediaWorks from those exact years. So well done to whoever
wrote
this.
Where did that come from then? How would they have found that? Was it on, did you have that on a bio, on your website, anywhere?
Probably. But that involved some legwork on...
Somebody actually had to do it, huh?
On Chad Reynolds. And I'm putting it's tongue in cheek. I'm not using the word celebrity, like they're using the word celebrity and star and all of the rest. So I guess it's just interesting that... whatever, like clearly they put enough work into, anyways, that's not the best. Hold on, we're almost there. Family life. He and Melissa share a daughter. It's an interesting choice of words. Share a daughter named Riley, who was born in February of 2018. Okay, yeah, that's Instagram. You'd be able to definitely see that. Here we go. Associated with, this is the last part. He operates, okay, the last one that we just read, he and Melissa share a daughter named Riley. associated with. He operates the Clean My Space digital empire with wife, Craig Benzine.
What?
The two met at vlogger convention ClamorCon. So here's the rub. The reason why they know I'm an entrepreneur and the executive producer of Clean My Space is because I have an Instagram account, which that's what I say. On said Instagram account, they clearly pulled some of this information. Some of it. Only a little bit of it. I never mentioned on Instagram 360 Media Works, I was a graphic designer, and how we started our YouTube channel. So clearly there's other things. This last bit is only there because on my Instagram, we were there at that ClamorCon at the same time. We were all standing in a circle. Craig and there was a few other creators who were with. And I've been a fan of Wheezy Waiter since my very earliest days on YouTube. So I was like, can I just get a picture with you? I've been a big fan for a while. And of course, Craig's an amazing guy. And I took a picture and I posted it up. I'm just like, hey, I'm so pleased to meet Craig Benzine. How that got misconstrued as to me operating the Clean My Space digital empire with my wife, Craig Benzine, I'm not too sure, but I think I'll leave it at that.
Wow, that is funny. Your wife. And there's no way to even like change this. Not that it really matters, but I don't think you can go in there and like contact somebody and say, you know, this is all just wrong.
You know, some of them I think do have a little link where it's like, do you have an update? However, if you actually think that there's some kind of Wikipedia mechanism that if you were to do it, that these people are updating celebritynetworthlist.org/Chad Reynolds for any particular reason. But either way, Steve, all I do know is that we are ridiculously loaded.
Woohoo.
We got that going for us.
I'm going to go travel the world now. I'll shoot some shorts along the way.
Oh, just to irritate some people. You can do it about how much money you have, Steve. How much money you have.
Well, that's all we got for this week. And once again, thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.